Voices that inspire the extended interview.
Hi, my name is Phil Croton. I work with the Southern Shakespeare Company. I wear many hats for them, really. I appear in schools, in elementary, middle and high schools, as Shakespeare himself, Shakespeare man. So I'll go in and spend maybe 45 minutes talking about Shakespeare's life as if I am the bard himself, my childhood in Stratford-upon-Avon, the things I went through in life, how difficult life was, you know, for children those times. I'll come back to that in a minute. But and then I also direct plays for them. I'm directing The Tempest with our junior company, the wonderfully named Bardlings, who on the Saturday and Sunday of the festival this year will be performing The Tempest ahead of the main show, which is The Winter's Tale, which begins on the 9th of May and goes through Mothering Sunday. And it's a wonderful play. So we're very lucky. The Bardlings are really looking forward to being on the big stage at Cascades Park and performing a shortened version of The Tempest. And we're full in rehearsal. So that's one of the other things I do. And I go in and do workshops as well. We work with teachers on trying to get them to understand the difficulty of teaching Shakespeare to students who often first come across it in 9th and 10th grade in high school, where they're given a book to read. And Shakespeare didn't write books. The one big thing that I try and get across to all my lessons is that Shakespeare wrote plays. He wrote lines for actors to bring to life. And if you read Shakespeare as a book, it can seem incredibly dull and hard work, and the language is difficult, the speeches are long. But what you need to do is to see it performed, or better still, perform it yourself. So if you read the opening scene of The Witches, for instance, you know, it's when shall we three meet again in thunder, lightning, or in rain, when the hurly-burly's... When the hurly-burly, what's... I don't understand this. But when you get people actually performing it, and you have three students up in front of the class becoming witches and talking about meeting Macbeth and so on, it becomes interesting and it becomes alive. And that's what I try to get to them. I haven't done enough of this in schools, really, but I'm thinking about what I wanted to talk to today about what can inspire people. It was why I would like to suggest to most teachers when they're teaching it is not to go through the class having one person say Juliet's line and then somebody else do Romeo and then change it and have another girl play Juliet and another boy play Romeo as you go through the book. It's far better to treat it as a theatre company and cast it to have someone play Juliet, someone to play Romeo. So the voices that the rest of the class are hearing are consistent and they can get the through line that those characters are trying to say in the play. When you break it up all the time by having... try and be fair and having everyone say a few lines, it loses, I think, the plot. So be a theatre company, cast it. The rest of the class will get far more benefit out of hearing Friar Lawrence as Friar Lawrence from the same character all the way through, and they would have different voices, having different takes, and you lose, as I say, the continuation of that same scene. My job really is to try and get the children to realise that he isn't a dull, dead author, that this man can inspire, can lead children to amazing plots and wonderful poetry. I was asked just a little while ago, actually back in February, to go to Goodwood on Valentine's Day, where a number of couples had decided to tie the knot to commit their life to their partner. They chose to have someone, in fact Shakespeare man, read Sonnet 116, which, you know, he wrote 400 odd years ago, but is still absolutely relevant to couples today. And it goes something like this. Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love alters not when it alteration finds, nor bends with the remover to remove. Oh, no, it is an ever-fixed mark that looks on tempests and is never shaken. It is the star to every wandering bark whose worth's unknown, although his height be taken. Love is not time's fool, though rosy lips within his bending sickle compass come. No, love alters not with his brief hours and weeks, but bears it out even to the edge of doom. If this be error, and upon me proved, I never writ, nor no man ever loved. It's still a beautiful thing to have any marriage, I think, and it still is relevant, as a lot of Shakespeare's works are. Sonnet 18 talks about writing things down and them lasting forever, you know, and it's proved because I'm still reciting Sonnet 18 all the time. So, yeah, that's me. That's what I do. And I'm just delighted to be here with you today.
So, Phil, that was a lot.
Sorry.
Taylor and I are smiling. That was like, that's what you get when you have a professional actor come in, you know?
No, I'm so sorry. I should.
No. I love it. I love it. So where did your passion for Shakespeare and theater. Where did that come from?
So yes, I was very lucky. I felt like Shakespeare, my life was a series of happy circumstances. I was in a play called Alice in Wonderland. My parents came to see it back in South London, where I grew up. And when at last we found something Phil can do, he can act a little bit, you know. So they decided to send me to Italia Conti Drama School in Clapham, South London, where the very first play that I studied with them was Julius Caesar. So I came across Shakespeare not in an English lesson, but as a playwright. And I had this wooden sword and was wearing this kind of cardboard helmet and thinking, this is great. This is one, there's people getting stabbed and there's talk about lions and all this stuff. And I just was completely enthralled, but I didn't understand the political maneuverings in ancient Mediterranean, you know, nothing to do with me at all. But I just knew I loved putting this white sheet on and was really enjoying being somebody else. And so I came across Shakespeare the best way, and that is by being given lines and performing him. And I've always been lucky, and that's how I've approached Shakespeare, and I've worked with theatre companies and do it. The trouble with Shakespeare, not the trouble with Shakespeare, but the problem sometimes with Shakespeare is that it's not performed particularly well. And if you go to see a poor performance of Shakespeare where the actors don't necessarily understand what they're saying, let alone the audience, it becomes dull, and it becomes hard work. And then at half time, you're thinking, can I sneak out without anyone seeing me? But you go to see at the RSC or go to the Globe or watch a professional company, and I'm very proud of the performances that the Southern Shakespeare Company puts on. We always have professional directors come in. They rehearse well. They have wonderful costumes. The lighting's fantastic. It costs a fortune to put on for free Shakespeare in the Park. And we're just very grateful to our sponsors and the grants we get, but without them, we couldn't do it. But it's a great show. And I think that encourages people to come to get into Shakespeare, to watch it further and to be part of it. But if you see it done poorly, and I'm not knocking community theatre because I've performed in community theatre many times, but Shakespeare needs to be done well, otherwise it does become difficult to understand.
And there's been so many interpretations of Shakespeare, you know, you set in modern settings and or traditional settings or in the traditional language or in a modern language, and it's amazing all the variations that you can perceive or see about Shakespeare.
Yeah, I'm very proud of something we did with Southern Shakespeare Company a few years ago. I was one of the writing team for a play called A Town Divided. When I came to Taliesin, I didn't realise that railway line separating the town was as true as it is. I thought it was an urban myth about, you know, wrong side of the tracks and that sort of stuff, until I saw the downtown, beautiful restaurants and hotels going to the railway line into the south side, and it's underfunded and a desperately poor area. And so we decided to write the play, Town Divided, with a girl from the south side who goes to Rickards, meeting a boy from the north side who goes to Charles, and they actually start dating at Cascades Park, which is right on the railway line, watching Romeo and Juliet, and realise they have a shared interest in this play. And they start dating, and both sets of families, both households, both alike in dignity, are opposed to this interracial relationship. And we asked people in Tallahassee to send us in their stories if there had been an interracial relationship about what happened, and we included those in the script. And it's been put on at TCC for over a number of years, and we're rewriting our other ones at the moment, so we've taken it off our touring sort of Canada for the time being. But I'm very proud of that play. And again, it's, as you say, Shakespeare can be adapted. And the children from all the schools that came to see it, from Godby and from Rickards and whatever, and from Charles MacLean, were in it, can get the what happened to these two children. I mean, basically, in Romeo and Juliet, Lord Capulet says at the very beginning of the masked ball, when Romeo's sneaking in, that's Romeo. And Tybalt says, let's get him. He said, no, it's Romeo. He's a nice kid. I like him. And so if only those children had spoken to their parents rather than to Friar Lawrence and marry in secret, that wouldn't have been the tragedy. And I think we can highlight those issues that are relevant to children today. We're looking at doing a story about teenage suicide, possibly under the Hamlet thing, about, you know, in university, about the loneliness that people can feel, the parents might die, and the breakup of a relationship with Ophelia could lead to her suicide. And so those things are all relevant, and our job, I think, as a company is not only to produce what we hope are wonderful productions of Shakespearean plays, but to look at other things that we can adapt and use Shakespeare as our basis for it.
So where do you get your inspiration from? Where did the ideas come? Do you like take a day off and go walk in the woods? Like, how do you keep yourself, you know, engaged in this process? It's hard.
It is hard, but I think we're lucky in that we're amongst a group of like-minded individuals, and somebody says, have you thought about doing this, you know? Bert Mitchell, who's one of the playwrights of Town Divided and adapted it recently, is always coming out with ideas, and Laura Johnson and Bianca Montague, that all have these wonderful themes going through, and we've had an artistic director this year for the first time, wonderfully named James Bond, who's directed many plays for us before, and has now sort of stepped back and has arranged for a director to come in and do Winter's Tale. And just we're constantly thinking of what can we do, what program can we do next time that would interest people in Tallahassee, and what can we look possibly adapting or changing, particularly for the younger people, for our bardlings. We've got Pat Minolti writing plays that we're using in the fall next year, probably. And so, yeah, we're always looking at how we can adapt and change, but keep the themes of Shakespeare alive.
So when you take on your Shakespeare persona and mm-hmm. you go into a school, what are the reactions you get?
they're very mixed. I try and change my voice a little bit, you know, to be more like I think Shakespeare would have sounded, which is like from the middle, you know, from the east of England. So I was born in 1564, a long, long time ago. And you see, some of the kids look like, how old is he? And I get them to work out from, what year is this? Because when I arrived, the doctor forgot to tell me what year we're in and blah, blah. So they're 400 now, much? So hopefully you can grab them, their attention to start with. And then you talk about the lack of sanitation, you know, you can leave this room and go around the corner. There's a white ball you can use, you know. And hopefully that they'd get into it and they understand how difficult it was for Shakespeare. Because that's what amazes me. In the middle of all this poverty with no sanitation, with no electricity, with no even basic commodity, we take no medicines, no standard. We would consider Shakespeare's life to be abject poverty. I mean, really would have been hardly any food. But he was so lucky in his life, you know, because his dad, the glove maker, became the mayor, the bailiff of Stratford-upon-Avon, a tiny little village. Part of his remuneration was that he could send his children, well, I say children, I mean his sons, because girls didn't go to school in those days, sons to a fee-paying school. Now, he would never have able to afford that, apart from his father getting this mayorship. He was lucky to survive at all. Infant mortality rates were huge. He was the third child. The first girl that they had, the Shakespeares, died after a month. The second one died after a year. William was the third child born, and he survived and went on to do what he did. But just pure chance. And 100 years before he was born, somebody invented a thing called the printing press, which meant that Shakespeare, as a young man, could read and study and learn how to read, learn French, learn Latin, could study, could lose himself. You know what it's like when you have a really good book, and it could be hammering with rain, and it's horrible outside, but you're in Monte Carlo because this book is fabulous. And that's what I like to think Shakespeare did. He would have read these stories of ancient Greek mythology, of Roman empires, of Italian love affairs and things like that, and just completely lost the fact that he's living in a place that stunk because his dad had urine in the back from making the gloves, and it was just awful. But he had a candle and a book, and he could just forget it. And then years later, he turned those into plays. When he left Stratford to go to London, there was a place called the Theatre. It's the very first theatre in London. It's not called the Globe or the Strand or whatever. It's called Swan. It's just called the Theatre because it's the only one. If you're going to the theatre, you're going to that building. And that's where Shakespeare happened to turn up when he arrived in London, and he got a job at eventually writing plays. When the horrible bubonic plague came and took the life of his son Hamlet, he went back to Stratford, and you think, well, life would be dreadful then for him, you know? But that's when he sat down and wrote his sonnets. He was in isolation. He wrote 154 of these wonderful sonnets. And because people were just stuck at home, they couldn't dare go out, because in the first year of the bubonic plague in England, 10% of the population died. Now, if that had been the same with COVID that we recently went through, we'd have lost 32 million Americans in the first year. And it was just dreadful. They had no idea what caused it, how to stop it. Anyway, so he wrote this wonderful poetry in the midst of all this dreadfulness up around him. And that's what inspires me, that if I can tell that story to young people today and they think they've got a tough life, imagine what Shakespeare went through and what he still did with it. He wrote these wonderful plays. He wrote this amazing poetry. You can produce art. You can do sculpture. You can change, do something for your parents that they'll last, you know, and it'll become something 18, you know, as long as men can breathe and so on. So my job is to try and make them realize that A, that Shakespeare existed in a terrible time and through that still produced amazing work. And the second one is to get them to enjoy it, you know, get past that initial, I don't understand what this means. I don't know what that word was, you know. This language is round the wrong way and it's hard to understand. Once you get past that and get the stories coming through, it is just amazing. And to me, every time I still see Macbeth, I still think it's how the audience is sucked into to listening to what the witches are saying and knowing what they actually mean and what Macbeth does. That's the beauty of any soap opera, if you like. It's the fact you know they're saying no man or woman born can harm Macbeth, and he takes it as, well, I'm invincible, but we know there's another way that women can, birth can be happen, and it could be through a male doctor through a caesarean operation. And it's, but Shakespeare's right about caesarean operations in 1600. I mean, please, he wrote about cutting trees down from the branches to be camouflage, and yet the English, 200 years later, came to America wearing red jackets, going, hello, boy, boomf. You know, I mean, just ridiculous. And this amazing person, if I can hopefully inspire one or two of our students to really get into, it'll help them hopefully fulfill their life in a way that not doing it doesn't.
I hope so, too. it's a depressing time, even though we have many modern... We have running water and we have flush toilets. But it's still a hard time right now. And people are feeling a lot of anxiety about what the future holds with climate change and politics out of control.
Right.
So the arts are really the thing that I think can bring some comfort and some hope and inspire us. I mean, any opportunity I can to hear a live performance, a play, music, an art show, I feel so much better through that experience. It connects me to the humanity of people.
Right, absolutely true.
And that is what I think why Shakespeare has held up for 500 years, 400 some years. It's amazing.
It is, isn't it? And I think, I always think back to after the bubonic plague had gone down and the theatres reopened, what it must have been like for those people who just struggled through this awfulness, not knowing what caused it or why, how to stop it.
Is it going to happen again?
Is it going to happen again? Of course it did. It came back two or three times. But you go to the theatre, and on this theatre, because there's no televisions, there's no radio, there's no TVs, the only place you can actually see anything like that is music, maybe in a bar or whatever, in a hall, or you go to the theatre where there's romance and there's gunfire, burn the place down, and then there's wonderful tragedies being told and histories of England and the kings and queens, and just lose yourself from that place you're in, the desperate situation. And as you say, in modern times, we all need escape, I think, you know. Since I've been in the US, politics have changed out of all recognition in that one side says one thing, the other side says, no, absolutely not. It has to be the opposite because the other side said it. It's just ridiculous. No common ground, no compromise. And it's desperately unfortunate. And hopefully people can get something from going to be inspired by music or art or the words of William Shakespeare.
Well, you have said a lot. So any final thoughts of... Even for that adult, how can they, if they, you know, they never managed to connect to Shakespeare, what would you say to them?
One suggestion, I think, for anyone going to see Shakespeare is to know the story, the basic background. I mean, Shakespeare is quite happy for people to know that. The opening of Romeo and Juliet is a prologue where he tells you exactly what's going to happen. The two households both alike, you know, they're going to die and then the families will be reunited at the end. You go, well, that's the story, might as well go home. But what he wants you to do is to not worry about that, but to get into the characters, what drives them to do what they do, what makes them. So any play, The Winter's Tale that we're doing, you know, in May, or Macbeth, or Midsummer Night's Dream, get to know who the characters are and what you're liable to see and the plot lines and a synopsis. That'll make your enjoyment of it so much easier, I think. And particularly plays like Julius Caesar or Antony and Cleopatra, which have got so many characters and so many different people coming on with strange names. If you've got a rough idea of what their background is or what they're liable to be doing, it helps your enjoyment, I think.
Great.
My name's Phil Croton. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. And remember, where there's a will, there's a play.